morning. My name is Lynn, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Defense Budget Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there'll be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Anna Solner, you may begin your conference.
Thanks so much, Lynn. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. I'd just like to remind callers that the call is being recorded and that audio will be available afterwards, which we will send out via email and post on our website, AmericanProgress.org. If you need to reach me or any of our speakers this morning, please feel free to give me a call at 202-478-5322. That's 202-478-5322. This morning, we're joined by Lawrence Korb, Senior Fellow from the Center for American Progress, and Michael Ettlinger, Vice President for Economic Policy here at CAP, to discuss Strong and Sustainable, How to Reduce Spending While Keeping Our Nation Safe, a new report by Lawrence Korb as well as Laura Conley. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Larry to give a brief outline of the paper, and then Michael will follow up with how this paper fits into the broader context of CAP's fiscal policies. Larry?
Right. Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining the call. I'm going to start out with something that will surprise you. We and the Republicans who just put out their manifesto agree on something. Preface their section on national security by quoting Eisenhower, and we do too. And if you take a look at our report, we point out that Eisenhower said that national security was a combination not only of military power but economic power, and that's one of the reasons why we're talking about reducing defense spending to increase our overall economic health. And Eisenhower also refused the calls of a lot of people there to increase defense spending to deal with what people over-exaggerated was the Soviet threat. Now, with that in mind, let me again make a couple points. No matter what you do, no matter how much you spend, you can't buy perfect security. There's no end to what you can spend on. So you're always going to take risks, and our feeling is that the budget we propose does not increase the risk substantially or jeopardize national security. We also feel that if you're going to deal with this budget deficit, defense has got to be on the table because after Social Security and Medicare, it's the third largest expenditure in the federal budget. This, we think, is an appropriate time to cut the baseline budget. We're not talking about the war funding, because you've had 13 years of real growth in the defense budget, which is unprecedented in our history. And if you look at the baseline budget, even if you control for inflation, it is now higher than at the peak of the Reagan buildup. And also, if you look over the last decade, you find that our spending is increasing much faster than ours of our adversaries or potential adversaries. All of the ideas that we put forward have been put forward, talked about, discussed by Secretary Gates, Admiral Mullen, people at the Air War College, and even Dick Cheney. We also keep in mind that we've done this before. As I mentioned, Eisenhower, concerned about the national debt, reduced spending in real terms from the budget that he inherited from the Truman administration. Richard Nixon, coming in as we were getting out of Vietnam, cut defense spending by 32% to fund a lot of the social programs that are still with us today. And even President Reagan and the first President Bush, when Graham Rudman Hollings' deficit reduction law was passed, cut defense spending in real terms by 23% even before the end of the Cold War. Let me go over briefly some of the cuts. We agree with Secretary Gates that you can reduce overhead and bring about some efficiencies. But unlike him, he wants to plow it back into the budget, we want to use to reduce the budget. We think that you can cut the number of Americans deployed in Europe and Japan from 150,000 to 50,000, particularly since the Europeans themselves are cutting their own defense budget. We endorse the proposal of the three scholars at the Air War College about reducing nuclear forces to 311 operationally deployed strategic weapons. We agree with Secretary Cheney that the V-22, which is now a $50 billion program, should be canceled. And even that would leave the Marines with 150. Like Secretary Gates, we ask why you need to the Navy needs 11 aircraft carriers when nobody in the rest of the world has more than one. In fact, Secretary Gates, in his first budget, said he wanted to reduce the number of aircraft carrier battle groups from 11 to 10, but he said 2040. We think you can certainly move it up to 2015. We look at the missile defense programs that are not working, again, following on something that Secretary Gates did. The Marine Corps Expeditionary Fighting Vehicle, which the Secretary has also said, why do you need it when the Marines have not had amphibious landing under fire since Incheon? We pick up the suggestions of the Pentagon's own Quadrennial Review of Military Compensation and their Task Force on the Future of Health Care, something Admiral Mullen has been concerned about with the rising cost of those two areas. We take a look at the fact that Secretary Gates in a recent issue of Foreign Affairs said we won't be doing nation building under fire. So we ask, well, then why can't we, after we get out of Iraq and Afghanistan, and hopefully that'll be by 2015, reduce the number of people in the Army and the Marine Corps back to the levels before we got involved in Iraq and Afghanistan. You can also, again, picking up on Secretary Gates, cut the number of carrier battle groups from 11 to 9, given the fact that we have so many more than other people. And then if, in fact, you want to look at research, development, test, and evaluation, even in real terms, it's higher than it was at the height of the Reagan buildup, and so we think you can make some reductions there. Now, overall, I believe these are conservative in terms of the type of things that the impact on our military strength. And finally, we go, and Michael will get into this, depending on what spending cuts are needed from defense to meet the goals that he's talking about, we lay it out from 50, 60, 70, and all the way up to a little over $100 billion. Thank you, and I'll turn it over to Michael.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, we've done a number of studies and reports on the federal budget deficit picture, and certainly we're running very large short-term deficits now, but those deficits we feel are necessary and important and actually contribute to long-term deficit reduction because they jumpstart the economy, and we need economic growth to reduce our deficits in the future. But even if we assume that the economy is doing better in 5 and 10 years from now, the projected deficits are unsustainable and have to be addressed. And we have a body of work that discusses that. You know, this discussion of the defense spending cuts in this report is inevitably gets all wrapped up in the deficit conversation. And there's no question that $109 billion of cuts in defense means fewer cuts in other things, and lower tax increases as we move ahead and try to address our long-term deficit picture. But to some extent, actually, the impact of these cuts on the deficits is besides the point. We'd want to do these cuts anyway. You know, the point Larry and Laura make in this paper is that these expenditures aren't necessary for our national security. And having these sorts of expenditures that aren't necessary, it would be unfair to taxpayers, bad for the economy, just as any expenditure that's unnecessary and misallocates resources is bad for the country, whether or not you need those cuts for deficit reduction. So that said, when our national security team told our economics team that there were savings to be had of this magnitude without adversely affecting national security, we were glad to hear it. We released a paper on Tuesday called 1,000 Cuts that showed how we would cut spending to reach a budget and primary balance by 2015. The bottom line is that it's very painful. It's painful, you know, if you try to achieve the entire $255 billion in cuts needed to get to primary balance all through spending cuts, but it's even painful if you do less in spending cuts and more on the tax side. And many of the cuts that we list do harm the country and its people, from highway spending to health research to Pell Grants. These things are important things for our economy, the health and security of the country. One point we make in the report, though, is that this is all easier to the extent that we can achieve savings through government efficiency and cutting programs that don't work. When we do that, then we get savings without undermining public functions that are important to the country. And now, of course, efficiency gains and cutting programs that don't work fall far short of getting us to where we need to be in terms of our fiscal balance. But they can contribute, and when we find those things, they do alleviate the pressure on important programs and investments as well as on revenues. So I think, you know, the great value of this report by Larry and Laura in the context of deficit reduction is that, in fact, they show us a way where we can achieve substantial savings without undermining an important objective of our federal government. Thank you.
Lynn, with that, I think we'll turn it over to questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. At this time, there are no questions.
Great. Thank you again, Lynn. With that, I'd like to thank our callers for calling in. Again, if you need to reach me or any of our speakers, my name again is Anna Solner. My number is 202-478-5322. That's 202-478-5322.